Well, hey there, gorgeous listeners. Welcome back to Throwing Shade. Alan, hey, how's it going?
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem. How wonderful. So, last episode, we dove deep into the mystical wonders of Lilith and her, and how just complicated and nuanced that character is in her origin story. And this week, it sounds like we're going to do some more Lilith. Yeah?
Yeah, a little bit more.
Okay.
A little bit more detailed into that story, and there's a lot more to come, so.
I'm ready. Let's do it. Okay. Let's kick off.
Yeah, so this is something we're learning from the Chidah, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai.
Okay, so the Chidah was, he's from the 1700s in Jerusalem area, biblical scholar, kind of a big deal.
Yeah, way to go, Miriam.
Yeah, I did my wiki. Yeah.
Okay, nice. Thank you for doing the wiki.
That's what I'm here for.
So the Chidah, he's actually bringing from a different Mekubal. We're going to get pretty mystical here, the Zohar stuff too.
All right, going deep.
So he's he says about Lilith that, first of all, Lilith didn't get her name right away.
Oh, interesting.
Her first name was actually, drum roll please, Chava. Which is
what? Seriously?
Which is very confusing. Yeah.
That's super confusing.
But she's called in the books Chava Harishaina, the first Chava.
Oh. Okay.
She, we're going to learn where she gets the name Lilith in a minute.
Yeah.
But
so Chava, by the way, is Eve in English.
Yes.
So effectively, they're saying that Lilith was the first Eve.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
How we would say it in English, as it were. Okay, great. So, well, Chava Harishona, the first
word,
Eve.
But the word Chava in Hebrew means life. It's a way to say life.
Right.
As opposed to Adam, which has a number of meanings.
Right.
Aleph Dam, the first blood, the first human blood.
Oh, so Dam meaning blood, right? Yeah. And Aleph being the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet.
Right.
Adam also coming from the same root, the same shoresh as Adama, which means earth, which, you know, the second story in Genesis has Adam being formed out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So fascinating.
Right. So, and what I'm about to say, I should mention, in addition to being pretty mystical and out there, it's going to get a little racy. It's going to get a little politically incorrect. We'll have plenty to discuss.
Okay, so parents listening with their children, or more sensitive listeners, as they say on NPR, please be warned.
Right. And so a lot to dig into here.
Okay.
Remember that we're not taking anything at face value. That's the Jewish way. So, right. So I'm going to say what it is, and then we'll actually understand it later.
Okay.
Okay.
Nasa v'nishma. Let's do it, and then we'll understand it.
Very good. Okay. According to this Mekubal that's quoted by the Chidah, that what happened is the Chava Harishaina, this first Chava, she was initially created to be the same height as Adam Rishon.
Oh, like physical height.
Physical height, yes.
Okay.
And because of this, it actually caused a problem. Because of this, this is why she didn't accept Adam's authority over her.
Ah.
And that's why she fled.
Okay.
and then subsequently, that's why Hashem created the second Chava from the rib of, from the side of Adam.
Okay.
And when Hashem did that, the first Chava got jealous, and she started to do, and what's called in Hebrew, she mileles. Mileles means to incant. She started to do spells directed at the Chava, the second Chava.
Mileles, milelet?
Yes.
Or that sounds an awful lot like another word.
And that's what she's called, Lilith.
Oh,
right.
Interesting.
You look like you maybe were expecting a different answer.
I expected nothing. I came in here with beginner's mind. I'm ready to learn anything. Wait, so was Chava like Eve number two? Was she shorter than Adam?
It seems to be that way. I don't know. But if you look at, you know,
this is not humankind. A question I had ever had reason to consider before, except when you look at like every Renaissance painting where it's very, of Adam and Eve in the garden. It's very like, you know, traditional milky skinned Adam and Eve. And they're both sort of, you know, plump and light and whatever. And Eve is always, you know, the woman's always shorter.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that also, I mean, I'm no expert in this field, but isn't it the case that biologically, we should hold off for the discussion for the second segment, but I thought that in general, women are shorter than men. Is that wrong?
I think so. I think so. I mean, we probably have listeners who know this stuff better, but my understanding is the average height of an American male, which we're taller than a lot of people in the world and shorter than a lot of others, but an average American male is something like 5'9" or so, and an average American woman is something like 5'4".
Right.
Which is a pretty significant difference.
Okay.
But that's obviously not across the board.
Yes. No, it's not. For the listeners who don't know us, Miriam is actually taller than I am. So I thought I would point that out.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, they can tell by, you know, the way we speak.
Mm-hmm.
That. Yeah.
Okay. So moving right along.
That's it. I'm leaving. Just kidding. Continue.
Okay. Yes. And so, and that's why she's called Lilith. Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What does she do next? She goes to those men who have inappropriate sexual thoughts,
mm-hmm.
thus causing them to ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
She collects the ejaculate from them.
Yeah.
And then uses it to have babies.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And this is straight from the Zayar.
Yeah.
And it says there also that this Rishayna, this first Chava, who is Lilith, who mm-hmm. we know as Lilith, became the wife of the Samech Mem, who is the one of the very, very, very destructive Shadim, whose name I won't complete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After she becomes his wife, she sends him to avenge basically Adam and Chava. She sends him off to cause whatever destruction he can to them.
Yeah, she's ticked.
So what does he do? He rides on the Nachash, the snake, that we learn about later.
Oh.
He's riding the snake, and he seduces Chava, the one we know as Chava, the second one. Okay?
Okay.
And that's also straight from the Zayar. And then there's more. You look like you're like gazing off in the distance or something.
I'm just processing. Like there's so many levels of things happening in that.
Okay.
Right?
Let's discuss that in the next segment.
Let's go to a break. Okay. So when we left off before the break, we learned that Lilith was actually literally named the first Eve, that she got upset, and the whole garden debacle with Adam and Eve 2 was actually because of this cat fight that was going on. But apparently, Alan, I cut you off. So let's finish out what we were studying, and then we'll talk more about it.
Okay, sure. I'll say this piece, and then I'll say one more thing, which is, first of all, that we also learn, by the way, from the Arizal in a sefer called Torah Shlema, that all of this stuff basically boils down to the first Chava, who we know as Lilith. All she really did was she went and had adultery with the Nachash. And that's what caused everything. So that's like another sort of piece to think about. And I bring it up because there are other pieces too. There's another commentary that we may get to that says that Lilith never was created of flesh in the first place. So this whole thing about being the same height, maybe we're not talking about a physical height after all. So, I'm bringing all this up to say, like, this is not quote unquote written in stone. There are all these different understandings
not, right?
of, anyway, I just thought I'd, you know. So.
Okay. So wait. So hold on. So the timeline is essentially that Adam and the first Eve, who ends up being Lilith, get created together. And she's upset at the whatever power dynamic arises from between them and has an affair with the snake before she runs off.
To be honest, I'm not sure exactly how far along in the story the Arizal takes it, but where it comes from exactly. But
the Arizal being Isaac Luria, of the sort of major Kabbalist mystical thinkers of Jewish tradition.
Yeah. So I don't want to say anything else about that.
Uh-huh.
I'm just bringing it up as a way of pointing out that it's not as though the stories that we're telling them, according to the particular rabbis that we have picked out, mm-hmm. are the only ways to understand this story.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, that's all.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of all of these texts, right? There are so many levels and directions and all of that you can dig in and take them with. But
Shivim Panim, the Torah, we say there are 70 exactly. faces to the Torah, 70 facets to the Torah.
Indeed. And I love this word, total side note, but I love the word Panim, which gets in modern Hebrew, it gets translated just as face, but it is a plural noun. Mm-hmm. And there's this extra sort of layer inside of that word, whereas in English, face is very much about outward appearance. Panim in Hebrew has dimensions to it. It's about the inside and the outside. It's inherently plural. It's about that multiplicity of ways that we present ourselves to the world, which I really love. So this is fascinating, and it also kind of takes away, it's interesting because it takes away some of the agency from the snake, who seems like this sort of treacherous actor in the pshat, in sort of the simple reading of Genesis. And in this context, the snake seems just sort of like he's being used.
Hmm.
Right? Like he's having this affair with Lilith, which I don't know whether he's into it or not. But then, you know, she's...
The snake is?
Yeah.
Whether the snake is into it or not?
I know that's the question everybody's wondering. But then it's Lilith's husband who's going and like riding him in order to...
Well, that's right. So riding can mean... In modern Hebrew, like a person rides a horse, uses that same Hebrew word,
right?
Rachav.
Yeah.
But in traditional Jewish understanding, there's the idea of the horse and the rider. Mm-hmm. This idea being that the rider is in charge, the rider is in control.
Yeah.
And this Sam character has the ability to control the snake. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what's supposed to be understood here. When it says he's riding the snake, it doesn't mean he's literally like got a saddle on the snake or something.
Yeah, no, I can't.
He's controlling the snake.
I mean, that's definitely what I pictured, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's literally happening, although I really kind of hope so. Yeah, and I mean, I think in that instance, the snake is a bit of the, I don't know, the id, you know, representative of those sort of more base actions and desires.
Well,
and
it's an animal.
Yeah.
Right. So when we say snake, I should clarify, doesn't mean necessarily a snake like we think of now, because we know that the snake pre-expulsion from the garden,
right,
was a different creature, because it says that it had its legs taken away from it and that it was eating the dirt of the earth now. And
right.
It's not a snake like we think of necessarily, certainly not at this point in the story.
Right.
It's an animal.
Right.
And so, you know.
Yes. Snakes are still animals. I'm just saying.
My point is, so there's, I think, a lot of really interesting takeaways, and I don't want to get overwhelmed here or overwhelm our listeners either.
Pick one. Underwhelm them. just kidding.
Well, okay, so we kind of did our feminist thing in the last episode, but I think it's worth noting...
We're done with feminism now.
I don't...
No more. We've run the gamut.
Your words.
Clearly, I jest.
Anyway, I just think it's worth noting that it's it's spelled out here more clearly than it is in other places that I've seen, mm-hmm. that Adam is supposed to have authority over the first woman.
Yeah.
And she rejects that.
Mm-hmm.
And spends the rest of existence trying to, you know, curse out the humans and trying to get revenge on them.
Right.
Starting with sending her husband, her new husband, the Sam, mm-hmm. to go and cause their downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's one.
Right.
Well,
and it's interesting that part of how she does that is by, you know, collecting the semen of these unwitting young men.
Right.
And using it to create her offspring, which is sort of bastardizing the, you know, one of the things that really only the female of the species can do, right? Like, women give birth. Mm-hmm. And she's weaponizing that in a way.
Right. I'm really glad you used that word, because in the next episode, I'd like to talk about weapons. But
okay.
It's a really awesome story.
Ooh,
But
stay tuned.
But yeah, and basically it's I hear what you're saying, and that's actually where I was going to go with it, is this idea that men in a sort of twisted way become victimized by saying, if some man somewhere, you said young man, doesn't have to be young man.
Sure.
If any man anywhere has an emission of any kind, on purpose or not.
Right.
That's created got countless demons. Lilith, that's caused by Lilith, and Lilith takes advantage of it.
Right.
And those Shadim are there to cause destruction now.
Right. And so that becomes a force for instilling a real sense of shame.
Right.
Right. Which, you know, shaming someone is an effective, if not entirely ethical, way of, you know, controlling or, you know, guiding a group of people. Mm-hmm. And I also think, like, there's part of me that thinks about Lilith in sort of that hyper feminized Disney villain kind of way. Like, you think about every Disney lady villain, right? You think about Maleficent, you think about Ursula or any of them. They're always really made up. They're always really exaggerated examples of womanhood and femininity and things like that. And I feel like there's an element of that happening with Lilith as well, that she's taking all of these, what should be the comely, you know, pleasant, you know, side of what it means to be a woman, and really, like, pushing that to a terrifying extreme, in a way that, you know, just, like, makes you uncomfortable to think about, right? I mm-hmm. mean, we talked last episode about her. I mean, she's collecting all of this seed to have more than 100 babies every day, because so many of them she knows are going to die because she chose to stay out of the garden. And it's just like this idea of femininity and birth and womanhood and what it means to be a mother and all of this taken to this really horrifying extreme.
Well, so it's right. And I just, not to put too fine a point on it, but it's taken to this extreme so that she can have revenge on
right.
the humans who yeah. caused this for her.
Yeah.
Right. She doesn't think of it necessarily as her own fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. There's more to dig into here. We're going to have to keep going in another episode. But thank you, Alan, for totally, like, weirding
making
me out.
Everybody
and making
uncomfortable.
Making everyone uncomfortable. Really appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Whew. All right. Enough with the tough stuff. Let's do something fun. We got a really fun.
No promises.
This is not going to be fun. I'm just kidding. So we got a great listener question from Hershey, who Alan sent me a screenshot of a WhatsApp conversation, which I feel like is just so millennial. So he asked, "What's with all the shading in this week's Parsha?" Thinky emoji face. Question mark. You mean Rashi, says Alan. Hershey replies, yeah, Rashi in a handful of places. Alan, yeah, I don't know.
You don't have to read the whole
but
thing.
But we get a few shading sources from Rashi.
Okay, you can stop.
You sent me the whole screenshot. I'm reading the whole thing.
Please stop.
I just don't know what's so special about Vaera. But Mazel Tov, you've just submitted an official listener question to Throwing Shade. Tongue sticky outy emoji face. So, Alan, tell us about Hershey's question. Why are there so many shadium in last week's Parsha, I guess, at this point?
Yeah, we got this question.
The Parsha of Vaera, for whenever you're listening to this.
Right. Right. So it's after, I received this question after the recording of last week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I will answer it this week. But, right. So what Hershey there is referring to, first of all, thank you, Hershey, for a great question.
Yes, thank you. We love listener questions.
We do.
Yeah.
The question is based on, for those of our listeners who aren't necessarily familiar with the Parsha or listening to different
What's the deal? Weeks. What happens in Vaera? Just like general storyline.
General storyline. It starts essentially with the beginning story kind of is when Moses and Aaron are confronting Pharaoh for the first time, and they perform the miracle of when Aaron throws the staff down mm-hmm. onto the ground and it transforms into a snake.
This is a snake heavy episode.
It is. I guess it is.
Yes.
Pharaoh is unimpressed, and he brings his sorcerers to come, and they do the same trick with their sticks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear that it's very different, and it's made even clearer when the story continues, and just the very surface level understanding of the text. The snake that was initially Aaron's staff swallows up the snakes of all of the Egyptian sorcerers' staffs. And it continues on through the first couple of plagues as well, first mm-hmm. three plagues.
Okay, great.
And basically, Rashi sees this as a pretty exciting opportunity to talk about shading in a number of places.
Yeah.
In this week's Parsha. And I say he sees it as an exciting opportunity because, as I think we've mentioned a number of times, Rashi was living in Europe, in Western Europe-ish, in the Middle Ages, when shadim would have been a very regular daily part of his existence.
Right.
And in much of the Torah, one has to focus on Hashem the entire time
mm-hmm.
when making a commentary such as Rashi was doing.
Right. But finally, Rashi can cut loose.
Not, I don't mean it like that. In fact, what I mean...
Focus on the shadim that he's always wanted to.
I mean, by writing about shadim, which is something he's expert in, simply by living in that place in that time,
mm-hmm.
He and being who he was, of course.
Right.
But also by pointing out the very stark difference between what shade is, what mm-hmm. a sorcerer does, and what Hashem does,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
What we find actually, there's a number of different sources in the Gemara that talk about sorcery and shadim, and often they are found right near each other, right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's made very clear that they're different. And
okay.
So that's sort of what I'm trying to get at here. It may look like the same thing on the surface, but something very different is going on metaphysically here.
Mm-hmm.
So even between what a sorcerer does and what a shade does,
yeah,
and even also the rabbis concede in the Gemara in at least one or two places I can think of, that there is something that is just what we know as magic tricks, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
The magic trick of like somebody sneezing and an endless stream of handkerchiefs coming out of their nose.
Yeah.
You know that one?
Yeah.
That's mentioned in the Gemara.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, this is just a magic trick, illusion to the eyes, nothing special going on here.
Like in the context of some rabbi's kid's birthday party? Or like, why does it
in the context of sorcery, saying there is real sorcery that exists. There
right,
is
it's
real
kind
magic.
Of a taxonomical discussion, like naming those distinctions.
Exactly. I'm not saying magic, because we think of magic as being magic tricks, illusions, that sort of thing.
Right.
Which the rabbis knew about, but that's different. There is something that I'm calling sorcery, which is real.
Right.
And is extremely prohibited by everything.
Right. And the rabbis also admit that it's effective. You're just not supposed to do it.
Correct. And then there is something else, which is what the Egyptians were doing in at least some of these cases, which I'll explain in a moment. But that is, the Egyptians were not doing sorcery exactly. They were employing shadim.
Ooh, really?
Right? Yeah. So, and that's different from sorcery too, because they don't have any of the power, so to speak, in that.
Right.
Really, it's just summoning a shade to do a certain thing.
Yeah.
And then them doing it.
Yeah. It's more a political alliance than, you know, entertainment.
And then of course there is a nace, there's a miracle of Hashem, which is a completely different thing also.
Right.
But then, of course, there are different kinds of nisim, kinds of... I won't get into that.
Yeah.
But what I was alluding to a moment ago is essentially that that scene where Paro is, you know, not so impressed by the stick turning into a snake. He must have seen it before. So he calls over his royal sorcerers, which he has just hanging out in the palace, and says, okay, you do that too. And they do it. That scene isn't the first time, it isn't the only time in last week's Parsha where Paro calls upon his sorcerers to do something. In fact, it happens for the first three plagues. He says, so the first plague is the plague of blood, where all water sources,
the Nile River turns to blood,
the Nile, but also all the water sources in Egypt turn into blood. And he says, should I be concerned about this? Let's check with the sorcerers. And he's a very religious person. He's an astrologer, and the sorcerers are all related to astrology.
Yeah,
and
clearly has a keen eye for when something's happening in his kingdom. He's like, oh,
right.
But our entire source of water has turned to blood. Should I be worried about this? That is leadership.
Right. So he calls his
sorcerers.
Any
chance to rib Pharaoh.
He's the power. Well, right. I agree 100%.
Yeah.
He calls the sorcerers. He says, can you do this trick? And they do.
Yeah.
So they do it on a much smaller scale. But they are able to turn water to blood.
Right.
Okay. Then the thing with the frogs.
So Pharaoh's like, this is no big deal.
He's like, it'll pass. If my sorcerers can do it, it must not be so
great. It must not be so great. Cause like, look at these schmoes can also do it.
Right.
Okay.
And remember, cause Paro, he thinks of it, when I say he's a religious person, I'm not joking. He thinks of himself as a god. Right. So then the thing with the frogs happens again.
Right.
The sorcerers are able to conjure up frogs. And then lice happens.
Yeah.
And when he says to the and by this time, all the Egyptians, with the exception of Pharaoh, are like, what, you got to stop this. Just send them away already. Right. Like it's, you know, it's getting crazy with the frogs and the blood, and stop it.
Right.
And even the sorcerers themselves, and it says in the Torah itself, they when Paro says to them, can you do this?
Right.
They say essentially, no, this is the finger of God. And they use like
when they get to lice in particular.
Yeah. Yeah,
they can't just like walk into a kindergarten classroom and
no. The plague of lice was something that was beyond their capabilities.
Okay,
you know, whether they're using shadim or sorcery or whatever,
right?
They were unable to recreate it in any fashion.
Yeah,
and said, no, this is the finger of God, and they use they acknowledge God's existence at the third plague already, and these are the sorcerers of Paro.
Yeah,
and so think about how much longer Paro, waits it out, basically.
Yeah, okay, Hershey, thanks for your question, man, and Any other listeners want to send us something in, tweet at Throwing Shade, S-H-E-Y-D, and we will be happy to take that up in another episode. Okay, Shade Throwers, thanks for sticking with us. We'll close out with our action item of the week. And Alan, what I was thinking about was just the role of power in its many forms that has shown up in this whole conversation, both with Adam and Lilith and Adam and Eve and the snake, and then later with the sorcerers versus Moses and Aaron and God acting and all of these things coming together. And I think it's really interesting to look at the things of around us through the lens of power and who has it and who wants it and who's trying to get it and how, and the mechanisms for gaining more power or losing power, and to what extent those mechanisms are real or righteous, and to what extent they are healthy or useful, and to what extent they're not and hurtful. So I think it's an important lens to kind of look at the world when we get new information, when we hear about things that are happening, to look at it through that lens of power and who has it and who doesn't and what's being done with it, and how that lens helps us dig a little bit deeper, understand things a little bit better, and get to the source of things and look at what's happening around us with a little bit more nuance and insight.
Yeah, and along with that, I'm sorry, you usurped me last week.
You making a power play? Huh?
I like what you're saying. I just have to say, you know, I have to bring in something from Rabbi Nachman, who says,
of
like,
course you do.
Directly related to power is the attribute of humility. And what real power is can only come from humility.
Yeah.
And you know, those who are interested can look at Likutei Moharan, Torah, Ayin.
The writings of, well, the, I don't know, teachings attributed to Rabbi Nachman.
No, he wrote them.
He wrote them?
Yeah.
Okay, right on. Yeah. I love that, actually. And I think that's a perfectly complimentary piece to my action item. Yeah. I feel as though we are equals in this endeavor, Alan. Right.
No, I'm bringing up, because like, think about Lilith, her whole shtick comes about. She needs to have the revenge. She thinks she's
right.
Something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
That imbalance, or that perceived imbalance.
Right.
Becomes very painful. Awesome. All right, Shade Throwers. Thanks for learning with us this week. We will see you next time on Throwing Shade, Better Living Through Jewish Demonology. Catch y'all next time.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.